Why don't we go ahead and take the roll call, if you don't mind?
Sure. Trustee Bachner?
Here.
Trustee Kargi?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Brennan? Trustee Hennick?
Here.
Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
President Adusi?
Here. All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. I think we have, Sarah, you said one public comment that officially called in. I know there's others on the line here, but who called in?
Roxanne Bajo.
Oh, okay. Hi, Roxy. Okay.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. I've written a statement, so I'm just going to go ahead and read it. Good evening. My name is Roxanne Bajo. I live at 821 Bonnie Bray. I'm one of the six homes that abut the property line of the Sheraton, the new development in Harlem. We've all currently have a fence up that is 8 feet high that the developer has asked to replace. Prior to construction, when the homes and trees were behind us, that height fence did its job. With the four-story new building much closer to our lot lines, we are in need of a higher fence to provide some privacy, safety, and hopefully noise reduction. We previously asked, and the developer agreed, to raise the fence to 12 feet to give us privacy, not only visually, but only to help with the noise levels. Once the facility is at capacity, there will be employee parking, delivery trucks, ambulances, garbage trucks, and guest parking that will be accessing the property behind our homes daily. We've lost all visual privacy of our yards due to the Sheraton's building heights with their 40 plus windows that overlook directly onto our yards. We're hoping that a taller fence will help us retain some privacy. When we were asked regarding extending the height of the new fence, we were given different reasons why this can't happen. They ranged from the initial yes to the height variance not being allowed to the cost to the developer of raising the fence to that height. This has caused undue stress for the families on Bonnie Bray. We're hoping to have closure that benefits us both and a positive outcome with our new neighbors as the project is completed. We're all coming off of months of construction traffic on our street with hammering and pounding and beeping noises while sheltering in place. We've done it, but it's been challenging for our children to do remote learning from home, their parents to continue working, and our first responder and healthcare workers to get the rest they need. I'm reaching out tonight to see if the village can help facilitate another option for the new fence as homeowners. I can attest by working in the district that we are doing wonderful things in regard to teaching the importance of equity to our children. And by equity, I mean that everyone gets what they need. I'm hopeful that we can continue to offer equity to all at the village level. Our seniors in our community are getting a place to live. Our village is getting tax revenue by having a new facility. And I'm hoping that as residents, we can get the 12-foot fence that we need and are asking for. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much. And I will ask Eric, I know we, because I agree with you, there was a yes at one point in time, and I'm not quite sure where it all fell from there, but that we sit down with the developer and find a way to make this work if we can. So Eric, I don't know if you want to comment on it, but.
No, we have done that. So the residents did come back and ask for a 12-foot tall fence. If you recall, through the plan development process, what had been agreed to and permitted when the PD was approved as a condition was a variation to allow for an 8-foot fence. So as the developer was getting ready to put that together, there was a neighborhood meeting with the residents and a representative from the development team. Seeking a taller fence up to 12 feet. The developer took that under consideration and came back and said they were not willing to do that. Staff met with the developer and a representative from the Senior Lifestyles as well recently to try to convey to them the importance and the desire that the residents do want to see a 12-foot fence. The developer cited cost, timing, and then also the aesthetics from their perspective of what a 12-foot fence ultimately would look like on the property, and since has since declined of putting in that fence. They have continued to agree and will install landscaping on the property including some taller arborvitae that would go over the 8 foot the 8 foot fence limit. So at this juncture, that would be the best option for the residents if they wanted to get additional screening or privacy over the 8 foot fence. It would be in the form of landscaping. The developer has just indicated they're not willing to make the fence any taller, and there's nothing that the village can do within its approved ordinances and rules, et cetera, to force them to do so, unfortunately. So that's where we're at on that issue.
Okay. All right. So Rex, if we can, how about we do this? We find a time where we can get the developer and some of the residents and talk through this. I mean, it seems to me that landscaping versus a fence might be a cost neutral type of thing. So maybe landscaping, after they describe what kind of landscaping they're going to put in, might be, you know, might be acceptable to the residents. It might not be. So why don't we agree to at least have a conversation between the developer and a few residents, Roxanne. I don't know, Roxanne, if you can help us put that together. I see Joe's on this line as well, but it can't hurt to have a conversation and talk through this issue.
Hey, Eric, have they submitted a landscape plan yet?
Yeah, that was all submitted as part of,
the original.
The landscape plan for the private, their own property, yes, is part of the PD. We're talking about they're willing to put landscaping and pay for landscaping on the resident's private property, which wouldn't necessarily be part of the landscape plan, because that's for their actual property. So they're willing to do that, or in some cases give homeowners a cash payment in lieu of.
So let's lay it all out. The cash payment, the landscaping versus the fence. I mean, let's see what it all looks like and see if we can find some, you know, happy medium.
Okay. I appreciate that. I think it would be great if we could come together, and I think it would be great if we can come together on site. They have offered, you're absolutely right, Eric, that they've offered us, you know, money or trees to put on our property. We want, in addition though, the fence to also be raised. It's going to take a lot of time for those trees or any kind of landscaping to mature, to grow to a height that's going to shield us from not only just the physical piece, but just also being able to just get some noise barriers, you know, and I think that would help our situation. But I think it's important for all of us to get together. I think it's all been piecemeal. It's been he said, she said, and I think there's a lot of clarity that needs to kind of come. And hopefully they'll see our side of you know, what our needs are. I know that we're only 6 families, but it's going to make a huge difference and impact our lives if we can have that fence. So I appreciate the consideration of getting everyone together.
Well, and if I could just add too, I know I have had some conversation with residents as well, and I would agree that whatever we can do, because the reality is, Roxanne, obviously, yes, as you're saying, you may just be a few neighbors, but you are the ones who have to live with this every day and look at it every day. And I know that's been a conversation Eric and I had at one point, that most folks that have been part of this decision-making process aren't going to live with this decision every day, and the residents are. So it would be great to find a solution.
Yeah. So Eric, we'll talk through that, and then we'll find Roxanne, you know, the grouping of residents that we can meet on site. So thank you for that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good to see you. Okay, so let's go on to continuation discussion and action. We're not taking action like a motion here. I don't have the action sheet here.
No, it'd be more of looking for some consensus to move forward tonight.
Okay, very good. So discussion and consensus on the 2020 Halloween trick-or-treating. So I'll ask Eric to take, I asked him to put together a collection of what other towns are doing, especially those that surround us. and including, of course, what came out with the state of Illinois, the IDPH guidelines. The state of Illinois has basically suggested trick-or-treating, but in a very restrictive and safe way. So I asked Eric to let's go through that a little bit so that every trustee has the up-to-date information.
Lisa, can you see that? Can you see my screen?
I can see your screen, yes.
You can see the PowerPoint?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. All right, yeah, here's a quick, I know people see PowerPoints and probably start to have their eyes roll back in their head, so this will not be one of those PowerPoint presentations, don't worry. This will be real quick. So, you know, we met last week, decided to continue, kick the conversation out 2 weeks. What has since changed since last Monday was both the Illinois Department of Public Health as well as the City of Chicago have now issued guidance for trick-or-treating this year. And so what does that guidance ultimately look like? Well, for the IDPH, they have said as an alternative to door-to-door trick-or-treating, distribution of treats, if at all possible, could be left in individually wrapped candy treats, like you see normally, on a table, walkway, sidewalks, and any outdoor other space, and keeping about 6 feet of social distance from the door. Individuals participating in trick-or-treating, including those passing out the candy, should maintain a social distance of at least 6 feet, wear proper face coverings. Only household members should trick-or-treat together, if at all possible, again, maintaining social distancing from other trick-or-treaters. They're discouraging mixed household trick-or-treating, if at all possible, making sure you always carry your hand sanitizer with you at all times and use it frequently. Candy should collected should not be consumed until after any kind of hand washing. To me, this is almost like another step from when you were growing up. You couldn't eat your candy until your parents looked at it. Now you can't eat it until your parents looked at it and then you've washed your hands. But nonetheless, and again, a parent guardian should check all candy as we've talked about. And then outdoor areas are preferred for trick-or-treating. And obviously, just like everything else, discouraging indoor groups, gatherings, et cetera, where the risk of transmission becomes higher or greater. And open doors, windows are as appropriate to promote increased ventilation. City of Chicago, building upon that, they took it a step further. If you recall, the mayor and the Chicago head of the Department of Health actually dressed up. I'm a little disappointed the village president hasn't worn a costume this evening, but we can talk about that later. Masks aren't just for trick-or-treating this year. Again, also for the candy givers, similar to the IDPH guidance. Leave a light on or hang a Halloween sign in your window to let others know that you're giving out candy safely. This is something we will also do as well, is put together some custom signs, kind of a red sign, green sign type of situation. Red, if you're not going to be participating, green, if you will. Again, handing out candy, make sure you're socially distanced, have hand sanitizer, stay on the move, less congregation, as opposed to you know, standing in place and talking. All treats, no tricks. We don't want kids reaching into bowls and things like that. Make sure you wash your hands. Keep your candy crew small, as we've talked about in the IDPH. And again, no big house parties, large or small, this year. So next steps for River Forest, what we would anticipate doing, building upon the IDPH in the City of Chicago, we would publish guidelines consistent with those guidelines. We would create downloadable signage that indicates whether a household is participating in trick-or-treating or not. We can make those available at Village Hall for those who don't have them. One thing we looked at was making trick-or-treating an hour earlier. Normally, we run from 4 to 7. This would run from 3 to 7. Part of the theory here is, again, it's on Saturday. The second consideration is, again, just trying to get people to space out a little bit more, not kind of congregate all at the same time. And then the staff here at Village Hall will begin working with some of our community partners, figure out if a way we can create some sort of community opportunity event as an alternative if some people didn't want to do traditional trick-or-treating. So we'll be working the phones, talking to, you know, Kiwanis, Rotary, local PTOs, et cetera, and see if we can create, put our heads together and come up with something. And that concludes my presentation.
Eric, I have a question for you. In the materials for the meeting tonight, there was a link to the CDC guidelines, yep, which I think now are completely in line with the Illinois Department of Public Health guidelines. Am I correct about that?
I believe you're correct, Trustee Brennan.
Yeah, so traditional trick-or-treating is high risk, but trick-or-treating, according to these modified guidelines that you just went through with the IDPH, now considered to be a moderate risk under CDC, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, if you were going out in large groups, not social distancing, not wearing a mask, all those other things that we've kind of grown accustomed to doing, yeah, then you would be in a high risk category,
yeah,
by going ahead and making these modifications, obviously, and being outside, which is a big part of it, and which we encourage people to do all the time, then lowers that risk.
Yeah. So at our last meeting, I was one of the people who was not in favor of the village, putting or allowing or sponsoring or trick-or-treating this year, because at that point, trick-or-treating fell under the high-risk category for CDC, but I would be now, if we include in the text in the village communication about trick-or-treating, those six bullet points that were just in your slide deck there that said, only trick-or-treating in your, immediate household, and that, candy on the, table or the lawn or what have you, not the traditional going to the door trick-or-treating.
Yeah, I think, talk about that. Yeah, go ahead.
I think too that we should likely as a village discourage trick-or-treating in general. I think that if we have a lot of families out there like we normally do, the ability to socially distance is going to be very tough. I think I said that before. So I agree with you, Katie. I think that we can say families need to just be discouraged from trick-or-treating this year. If you want to take a moderate risk at trick-or-treating, you can, but it's going to be under these strict guidelines where you're not going to somebody's door. Going to be staying 6 feet, away from people as possible. That is tough though, because like during the day, you're going to have families being in the streets and with cars, so that can start to get dangerous. Eric, I do think that if you are going to design signs that are available, you should have some available on the website as well for people to print, because even going to the village to pick up a red or green sign poses a risk for some who may not want to take that risk. So having a clear printable sign that allows people to do that from home that they can tape to their door, and have simple language, but language that is, we are taking care of our household, not something dramatic, like we're not, being meanies and not giving out candy this year, right? We're still in the midst of a pandemic. And as we saw over the course of this week, it can just take one instance to make a huge impact on a small group of people. I think that at the time, even this evening, the school board, I believe, is talking about going back to school, and they're discussing that for October 26th. What I would hate to happen is they decide that they go to a hybrid model and go back to school on the 26th, have something happen during Halloween in our community, and kids and their whole programming goes out the door, right, because something has happened. So I really do think that we need to discourage families from trick-or-treating. If they are going to take the risk, then you gotta wear the mask. A parent has to be with you, your parent has to be with you, or your guardian. So those are my thoughts.
Yep.
Yeah. Erica, the one thing to point out though is the best we can do is issue guidelines. We can't expect the police to enforce 6 feet distance and
we can, and all but those we things. Can also say that we highly discourage it for this year.
Sure, but let's just be realistic here. We can't mandate that people only go with their parents and all the things you listed because we have no enforceability of that. I saw today in the Wednesday Journal that Oak Park is going to approve it, although their hours are a lot longer than ours, and I'm not really sure what the thinking was behind that. I do wonder about extending it. I mean, if we're concerned about this, I don't know that you're going to spread out the number of people that are trick-or-treating. I think you're just going to increase the times that people are going to hit houses. That was the only thought I had to your presentation, Eric. My experience has been, admittedly, different year, but that kids are still coming to the house at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. So I don't know that the hard deadline is meaningful, but I do think adding an hour is only going to increase the number of interactions there are. So I actually think we should go from either three to six or 4 to 7 rather than making it a 4 hour window.
And if I can jump on that, Eric, that's what I was going to opine is maybe changing the hours. It is a Saturday. So I know during the week it might be a little more difficult for parents, but this is a different time, a different environment. I don't know. I was almost thinking that we should do it if you're going to extend it an hour, but do it from 1 to 5 or do it from 2 to 6, but during the daylight hours where, I think the kids can be around and everybody can see the signs if you have a sign in your window. So it's during the daylight. That would be my only suggestion, is it be done during daylight hours.
So if I can offer some thoughts. So I appreciate wanting to be able to have guidelines for people. And I think a lot of people in town have been following guidelines that have been out there. But as we've also have seen that there are times that the guidelines aren't being met, and that's why we're seeing these spikes. And so I guess I would agree with Trustee Bochner in terms of essentially saying we're discouraging trick-or-treating, but if you are going to participate, if somebody chooses to make that decision for their family, then I think it's important to have the guidelines available, recognizing that we're not going to have police out there strictly enforcing things. Again, you're going to want family to take responsibility and do the best that they can. I guess for me personally, it seems the idea of having the table outside makes sense in terms of allowing some distance and not having people go up to the doors. It seems if that's how people are going to distribute candy, if that's what the guideline and recommendation would be, then I almost wonder if a sign is even necessary, because it seems somebody's going to walk up to a house and there's going to be a table out front or there's not. And so there's not going to be a need for anybody to have to print a sign, hang it in their window. Are people really going to be consistent in terms of hanging those signs? For those folks that are choosing not to participate, do we really need to put the onus on them to have to download a sign to say we're not in fact participating? That way it's also easy when you're coming up to a block, you could pretty much look down and see there's either tables set up or there aren't, which would make navigating around town, finding where the treats are set up. So that would be my suggestion, is to encourage, if folks are going to do it, put a table out front, makes it clear, plain as day to anybody who's participating or not. We don't have to worry about putting signs in windows. And then we're for sure not having people go up to the doors. You're less apt to have that risk of people going up to people's homes, which is what we want to avoid. And I think for people who particularly don't want to participate, whatever we can do to prevent people from mistakenly going up to other people's doors, and by saying only homes with a table in front are participating. I think the other point of discouraging as a general is that we're not necessarily encouraging larger numbers into our community either. You know, if we're posting trick-or-treating between these hours, then that's essentially putting out for folks all over. If we're saying we're discouraging it, then that might just mean people locally within, you know, a few blocks are going to coordinate with their friends and neighbors to have their kids trick-or-treat.
I got a couple things, if you don't mind. I'm gonna echo Rez's sentiment on. I'm in the camp of shortening the hours a little bit, and you know, just making it like from 3 to 6. I think the daylight, you know, point is very very important. You know, I think, you know, a couple of residents have asked for some kind of assistance from the village in terms of signage. So to, you know, put something on the website and ask them to download it, you know, it's one piece of paper and some ink off your printer. So I think it's something that's, you know, more helpful, whoever might want to do it. And then the last thing is, I'll just regale you with a story of it. 4 a.m. last Halloween, I got a call from Southwest Airlines that told me my flight back to Chicago was canceled, and I made it home in a snowstorm. So what's our plan B? Because there's not a lot of people that are going to sit outside or have a table out if it's snowing out. So I think we just need to talk about plan B a little bit also.
Well, we could talk about that. If it's snowing, I mean, I don't know why the guidelines would be any different. I think it's just going to be a lot less kids. And I think it's going to be probably, you know, more people staying home. But I don't think you can eliminate the guidelines. I mean, I think the guidelines should stay the way it is, right? 6 feet apart, you know, candy only, where not, you know, be at a house where you see a table or a sign that says no thank you or something that's polite. So I think, I don't know. I think
there might be some people that would want to participate, but may not want to sit at a table and just are happy to do it the traditional way. And I don't know, from a parent's perspective, or from a resident's perspective, that we should preclude those people from participating. I do think the sign is the best approach, because that gives everyone the option. So it doesn't limit me to saying, okay, I'll sit out in front of my house for 4 hours and distribute candy. I still want to give out candy, but don't want to do it from the inside. I still have that option, which I think we should make available to people.
So I agree with Bob's suggestion of 3 to 6 p.m. I think it shortens the hours and it makes it during daylight. It's 7:30 almost now, and it's pretty dark right now. So that's according to the hours. Along the lines of the table out front, I never would have thought that a homeowner would have been at the table. My thought in my head was that the homeowner sets out the table or the cloth on the front lawn, puts the candy out, and then goes in, and the trick-or-treaters come, and hopefully they're according to the guidelines, each with parents, and they're not going to take the whole table full.
An 8-year-old Bob O'Connell takes every piece of candy on that table and runs.
Okay. We tried the bowl outside the house one year. It didn't really work out very well for us.
Well, you don't want to put a bowl. You'd have to put them out. I mean, I think people would have to monitor. I think the idea is for people to put, you know, spaced out pieces and then monitor it. And the reality is, if someone didn't want to sit out there for 3 hours, then they could put their table out for an hour and be done.
Right. So a couple, it sounds like, a high level guidelines. I think we've talked about, you know, obviously trick-or-treating as we know it is discouraged, obviously. Trick-or-treating obviously will be allowed in River Forest, but in a very highly restricted way, according to IDPH guidelines. And I think the sign makes sense because it gives, you know, it's an option. You know, if I don't want to print the sign, I don't print the sign. If I want to print it, I think gives more options to our, I think, to our residents. I'd like to add an emphasis on, you know, ensuring that the parents are responsible. And it goes along the lines with what Tom was saying in terms of enforcing. We all know that we don't want to have a slew of emails come our way or Facebook pages come our way saying such and such is not wearing a mask. And although, you know, we're going to be very sensitive to that, and we'll try our darndest as elected officials to try to encourage people to do the right and safe thing, we've got to encourage our parents to please be engaged in this process and please help us help them be safe. And so I'd like to emphasize that on any guidelines that we put out is please help us help yourself be safe, and please, you know, watch your children and, you know, follow them, you know, as much as you can when they trick or treat. That would be what I'd like to add, so that we can ensure that there's additional people enforcing it.
I'm just wondering procedurally, is this going to be up again at our next meeting, or are we deciding the matter today?
No, we're going to give direction today. So it sounds like I'm hearing from all of you that we are in consensus of allowing, discouraging trick-or-treating in the traditional sense, but allowing it in the most restrictive way that we talked about in terms of the IDPH guidelines. And so I think everybody's in agreement with that. I didn't hear anybody disagree.
Kathy, just to clarify though, I'm sorry to interrupt you. What Erica said was discouraging trick-or-treating even with these guidelines.
Yeah.
Trick-or-treating period is discouraged because even according, if you do it according to these guidelines, it's still a moderate risk. It's not a low risk. So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's how I heard that.
Okay. Well, how does everyone feel about that? I'm fine. I mean, I just, whatever the group wants. I mean, I think.
I guess I wouldn't use the word discourage. I mean, again, we're parents are adults. They can make decisions for themselves. I just think if we establish the guidelines that people should follow, it's up to parents to make the decision for their children, and it's up for the residents to make the decisions for themselves, whether or not they want to participate. I just think the word discourage just strikes me as odd in this context. I don't think we have the ability to discourage people from doing anything. I think we should ask them to do it smartly.
Yeah.
But I think we absolutely can ask people to, we can discourage people from doing that as a village to keep our village and our community safe, for sure. Especially for Halloween.
I would agree. And there are multiple communities in the links that Eric shared that specifically say, Glen Clove specifically says, discouraging traditional trick-or-treating with guidelines. Highland Park, Wilmette, they all say discouraging.
Yeah, I agree with that, Katie. I mean, I didn't want to...
Forest Park is discouraging.
Didn't want to... I agree.
Believe Maywood is too.
What is it?
I believe Maywood is discouraging their residents as well.
I mean, I think that's what we're saying, really, because, you know, I mean, I think as Corina Davis, who's in on the phone here, basically said, I mean, 3/4 of the community is going to do something. So, okay. So I want to make sure we get this right. So we could discourage trick-or-treating, but if you're going to trick-or-treat, how about that? We will, you must follow these guidelines from the Illinois Department of Public Health. And any additional, our hours are 3 to 6. Is that what the consensus is? Okay.
Yeah.
And we will have a downloadable placard or something that somebody can download or pick up at Village Hall. Just to, again, as another option. What else?
I would ask Kathy that rather than just have a link to the IDP, Illinois Department of Public Health, CDC guidelines, we actually print out bullet points because there's a risk that people aren't going to read them. They're just going to see trick-or-treating. Okay, we're good.
No. I totally agree with that. I'm sorry if I made it. No, I absolutely agree with you on that, Katie. We have to be very specific in the guidelines. Yes. And we'll publish it all. Yeah. So I'm sorry if I gave you a different impression. Okay. All right. Well, I think we've got some good direction. Eric, are you okay with that? Is everybody okay with it? Okay. All right. That's all good. I like thumbs up. All right. Well, I appreciate your efforts here. I'm very happy and that we came to a consensus. So thank you very much. So I'd like to get a motion to adjourn.
I'll move to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. Trustee Bacher?
Yes.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Hennick?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes, sir.
President Ducey?
Yes.